Welcome to episode 18 of the Ikivi podcast. In this episode, we have with us Nadia Felch, an anti-diet nutritionist and intuitive eating counselor who supports people to have a healthier and more peaceful relationship with food and their bodies so they can live their fullest and most joyful life. In this episode, we talk about diet culture and the pressure society puts on us to eat and look a certain way. We discuss how very often diets are more focused on the goal of looking a certain way than their health benefits. Nadia shares with us how intuitive and simple this process of eating can be and how we can enjoy and build or rebuild our relationship with food and our bodies. Thank you so much, Nadia, for joining us and agreeing to do this podcast with us. I'm very excited for this conversation, and I want to get right started to it. You're an anti-diet nutritionist and intuitive eating coach. What does diet mean in this line of work, according to you? And what has led you to do what you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. It's always a real privilege, so thank you. Really, really good question. Okay, so to me, diet in this sense that you're asking, simply if we think of it like any attempt, any method, any concept that is designed to try and reduce our body size. Mm-hmm. So that would be my kind of slap-on statement, and that might be going to see a health professional to get a meal plan that controls your calories. It might be something you find on the internet. It might be something on Instagram. It might be a product. It doesn't really matter to me what that thing looks like or the method, but the intention is that you want to shrink yourself. You want to shrink your body. So that's that's kind of how I would define. So my work, therefore, is anti, I want to be clear, not anti that people want that, because how could you not want that, to be completely honest, which maybe we'll touch on a little bit today, but I'm anti that that is considered necessary. Mm-hmm. And I think especially for those who have been socialized and raised as women or identify as women, I think the pressure on what you look like is absurd and robs us of so many things in life. So that's what I'm anti. I'm anti the system that kind of provides that pressure to us. And if someone wants to pursue that, that's their choice. That's their body. So I just want to be clear. It's not like an anti-human thing. So I got into this space, to be completely honest, a lot because of my own personal experience with it, which I think is common in a lot of professions and a lot of niche areas. I have had an eating disorder. I have struggled a lot with my own body image. And that really led me to, I would say, perpetuating some of that stuff. I think that's also really common, that you really want a so-called help. Mm-hmm. But if you're not aware of your own stuff, your own suffering, your own trauma, your own privileges, your own biases, I think we kind of, you know, I saw someone say it this week, I think we teach people to become nutritionists and dietitians. We teach them to teach eating disorders and disordered eating. So what I found through my studies was most people who were coming to my student clinic, you know, you have to do a certain number of hours of clinical placement. How were all these people having the same concern? How were all these people so stressed about what they were eating, the weight that their body might have gained or lost? It really started hitting me that I had just spent years of my life trying to understand chemical reactions of food and, you know, all the amazing things that go on when we break down food and how we absorb it, all this fascinating chemistry. But the people sitting in front of me, that wasn't what they needed. Well, not at least initially. Like, what those humans needed was not to feel like this was the most important thing in the world, this being shrinking their bodies. And so it really came, I think, twofold from my own experience and I'm learning a lot of things, but then also realizing that this is huge. You know, the estimates are hard to nail down, but something like 75% of women around the world suffer with disordered eating or eating disorders.
Wow.
Yeah.
When do you think this began? Has it always been there? Or do you think it has some kind of relation to tech or our social media? Or has it been something that's always been there?
I think the pressure on women to appear a certain way, appearance-wise, kind of to the outside world, has existed as long as patriarchy has existed. Mm-hmm. I think women historically exist for reproduction and for objectification by men. So I feel pretty confident in saying this has probably always existed. It's just taken different forms. It's taken different methods. I mean, you can look at so-called diet concepts through all different types of generations and different medias long before podcasting existed, right? Long before social media existed. However, to your point about tech, absolutely, that has just skyrocketed access. Mm-hmm. So now I can't even imagine what it's like to be a 10-year-old, 12-year-old young girl. I just got chills thinking about it, to be honest. And all of those messages that you're exposed to, I'm 36 years old, almost 37. I was able to at least limit it to magazines if I could afford one every now and again. I was limited to the peers in my school or in my social, you know, kind of environments. But I didn't have to deal with Instagram. I didn't have to deal with any type of social media. Even things like, I mean, yes, every generation has its own kind of influences, but I really think the bombardment of this what your body looks like is the most important thing is possibly louder than ever and harder to turn off, I think is what I want to say, right? Like I couldn't always afford magazines in school. They were quite a luxury purchase, but I also felt like I was able to not have them, and that wasn't strange, but I also think it's quite hard for a teenager, and I hear this a lot, to not have social media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy maybe for an adult to say, oh, well, maybe they just, these young girls shouldn't be on it. But I mean, that's not the solution here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much everywhere, whether it's,
of course,
like from the old school ways of like billboards and magazines to online to everywhere, you're told that you have to have this kind of a body, or this is like, whether it's consciously said or subconsciously said, like you feel like that's what you should look like to be beautiful or to look a certain way. We see a lot of celebrities and influential people kind of advocate the idea of diets and talk about it a lot online now, on their social media as well. What or how can we ourselves become more aware? Like, it's really hard because there is that friction where, you know, you're trying to not worry too much about how your body is or what your shape and size is, but then you see these people that you look up to, you know, present themselves in this way, doing these different diets, juice detox diets and juice diets and all of that. How are we supposed to understand the dangers that lie within these, you know, diets?
I'm glad you phrased it like that, because I agree with you. I think it's really dangerous. I think it's underestimated the danger. I kind of want to bring in what we were just talking about here. So I think what is newer to this conversation is, as I said, I think the pressure on women to look a certain way, and that way has changed, right? Mm-hmm. So even each decade, the so-called look of beauty is different. But I think we could agree upon some things here. It's generally white. It's generally thin. And then some other stuff might shift around, right? We have a very Eurocentric kind of focus of a so-called female beauty. That is a weapon of oppression that has existed forever and ever and serves nobody except the patriarchy and capitalism. It does not serve women at any level. However, what's newer is in the last few decades, we have this kind of interlocking concept of appearance and beauty and acceptance and love. And depending on where we're from in the world and what our generational kind of historic influence is, that beauty may actually have been power in some ways, right? So maybe you being more attractive, so-called, to a man got you a so-called better marriage, may have got you some so-called bigger power, bigger money, whatever, right? So there are big things here that are bigger than this small conversation between you and I here. However, the newer part is health gets now thrown into, but don't you want to be healthy? And this is so good for your body, and cleansing or detoxing, as you said. And that's where I think the power of celebrity and influencer, it's kind of made it acceptable now because, oh, but it's about health.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just promoting six packs and beautiful imagery anymore that maybe was a little bit just the past, a little bit, right? Now it's young girls know about the terms you just mentioned. I had no idea what those terms meant when I was a teenager. I'd never even heard the word detox in my life. I probably thought that meant like drug and alcohol detoxing or something. Uh-huh. Like I never understood that people were worried about their liver function wandering around the world. And to be honest, I don't think they are. I think there's still an attachment to, well, maybe I'll lose weight.
Yeah.
Right. So what we have is this situation of moralism attached to the choices. So if someone is just on social media and you said they're looking at someone they admire or they respect, they like their style, whatever the draw is, and they're doing a detox blast for 7 days or something, that can feel so normalized because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And again, we add that layer of, oh, yeah, well, it must be good for you. I guess my invitation to anyone who's living with that is to recognize that no one knows your body like you do. Mm-hmm. No one can ever know your body like you do. And I would be inherently suspicious of anybody generally talking about those things publicly. Mm-hmm. Maybe suspicious isn't the right word, critical. And I want to be kind of clear, not critical of that human. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But use some critical thinking for yourself, right? That you can very easily unfollow if you find that triggering or confronting. If you're looking at someone and they're making you feel worse about yourself and your choices, really ask yourself why you're engaging with their comment. Why do you seek it out? Because social media can be such a great place, don't you think, if you curate it as such.
Yeah. I mean, that's how we got
that's
connected.
That's how we're talking.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's people doing amazing things like yourself. There's people with such amazing stories and experiences to share. And you can find something for everyone and everything mm-hmm. and every hobby and every interest. But, and I really feel confident in saying this, that any human can choose whatever choice they want. If they want to put that publicly, do I think that that has problematic aspects to it? Do I think it's a bit reckless? Yes. You know, if we have a big celebrity talking about a product that maybe they're now promoting, yeah, that has some problems to it. But at the end of the day, I mean, who are we to police other people in that respect? I think we have to just take accountability for our own well-being in that space and put the energy onto noticing how it makes us feel.
Can you tell us a little bit about health and with particular diets or dieting, right? Like you said earlier, everybody kind of portrays it as you should diet for a healthy body. But it's often, you know, people are often talking about body image and size rather than the actual, the health part of it. So what, because now we are in this, whether we like it or not, are in the other extreme of binge eating and, you know, and wanting to detox and like all of those things. Like, I feel like we're just in a pendulum where we're going, swaying back and forth. that balance is not necessarily there, I would say. The reason why I'm saying that is because I find myself doing it. There are sometimes I'm just like binge eating for whatever reason, whether it's emotional or, you know, something else. And then I'm like, oh my God, I've just done too much sweet. So there is a health problem there as well. Like binge eating definitely has, you know, the negative effects on your health. What are your thoughts on healthy eating and where do we need, and where do we need to kind of be with it?
So there's a lot to that question. Let's just, I you know, when people ask like, what could you talk about forever and ever? It's this topic, right? But I'm going to try my best to be succinct. I guess what I think we need to kind of clarify is the way that most of us are taught to relate to food and relate to our bodies by extension is through the lens of external information. So let me give you an example. No matter where we kind of get food information from, and it's never one place, right? It's going to be our families, our friends, our school, maybe our further education, media, lots of different sources. And that's just what it is. But very rarely in our systems of knowledge do we learn to prioritize our own information. Like, for example, what does my body tell me? How is my body feeling? What do I notice about my body when I eat this versus when I eat this, or when I eat this much, or when I eat late in the morning? Or except we're not really primed to be curious or prioritize our own experience. And that starts very young. I would also add a layer. What often happens, and this is exceptionally true in the case of anyone who lives in a higher weight body, particularly from childhood, because of the anti-fat sentiment that exists in the world, the inherent intuition and connection to body that we all have as children generally gets severed at some point. And it gets severed by lots of different influences for a variety of reasons. But if you are someone who is at a higher weight and has always been at a higher weight, which is normal, by the way, just to be really clear, because of the world that we live in, you might have been told something simple like, oh, you don't need any more dinner. Or, oh, do you really need to eat that? And just these little, like they're nothing. They sound like nothing, maybe. And I'm sure they're also intended with love. They're not intended with hatred or control in most cases. But what that does, especially repeatedly over time, is it really kind of takes away the connection that human has to their body. Because if they then go out into the world and the world tells them their body is a problem, which pretty much we all experience, but some of us to more degree than others, all of the things that we start to worry about are realized in the world. We also then add a layer of people talking nonstop about food and bodies, like it's a hobby.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, okay. So maybe we doubted that we had a problematic body. Maybe we started to doubt, oh, actually, it's okay. I'm hungry. It's okay. Or I'm emotionally eating. It's okay. Maybe we start to rationalize those things, but then the whole world tells us otherwise. So we have a system inherently built to prioritize other information from the outside world over our own. Now, it's not to say other information is irrelevant, but it's just not as important as the stuff that comes from you. And unfortunately, let me give you an example that came up this week on TikTok. Someone asked me, I'm new to intuitive eating, which is a framework that I use to help with clients. It's not any one thing. It's just a framework of really guiding through the process of connecting back to your body. They asked a really valid question. If intuitive eating, you know, it sounds great, but was her question. Isn't it bad that I won't be healthy, or I won't eat to be healthy, I think is how she phrased it. And so that says a lot about where we think about not micromanaging our food intake, where we think about not living with lots of rules and lots of rigidity around food, where we actually stop thinking about it so much. The assumption is we will just do whatever. That's actually the assumption for most people. And it may also be their reality if they've never experienced anything else. So where we have eating disorders and disordered eating, whilst eating disorders especially are a mental health concern and much less about the eating than people realize, the eating is symptomatic of something else.
Yeah.
But where we have disordered eating, you mentioned binge eating episodes, emotional eating episodes, these in and of themselves, for the most part, are driven by the ideas that we don't know our bodies, that our bodies need to be changed. And thirdly, that we live with some level of restriction or lack of self-care. So mm-hmm. for instance, if we are finding we don't eat very regularly, we don't really pay attention to our needs, our bodies, that's really very normal. I hear that from new clients a lot. They feel so shameful and embarrassed and guilty that then they get home and they eat so much food in their words, right? And maybe this is sometimes how you might feel as well. The thing that's generally happening is they're not eating enough food through the day and their body is simply trying to catch up. That's all that's actually generally happening. But the way that's perceived by the person is, I am out of control. I can't get it together. I have a problem with food. And the reason they believe that is because it's so normalized to skip meals. It's so normalized to cut out food. It's so normalized to go 12 hours without eating in the world. None of that is actually healthy or normal. So for instance, someone just starting to eat regularly, which by the way is the most important thing about nutrition, eat enough food regularly. That's the core thing to know. Once they start doing that, most of those behaviors go away all of their own. And that really speaks to the level of disconnection we have in society to our body, that we have such a big shameful story about eating so-called too much, when actually we're just responding biologically to restriction. And if we also add in there a layer of, I'm not allowed to eat this food, so it feels a bit naughty, and then maybe we eat lots of it because we think we have to start again tomorrow. These are still ideas driven by dieting. These are not actually like body-driven ideas. We just think they are. And it's so valid we think that, but it's really hurting us to have that perspective.
But don't you think that the choice of food in those times, like we are, like you said earlier, we're giving a lot of importance to food and different types of food. I think just sheer availability that we have right now, we can just kind of use our phone and order all kinds of food, probably something we didn't have earlier.
For sure.
Do you think that that's, and we also give it a lot of importance in terms of it giving us pleasure when we eat, right? Like when we eat something sweet, it gives somebody some pleasure. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, eating should be pleasurable, just to be really clear. That doesn't mean it always is. I know that. In fact, satisfaction, if we take it to a different word, satisfaction is part of nutrition. Is really not understood fully enough by most folks and not considered. And again, the reason for that is because we moralize food. So for instance, when we think about food choices, we have this really problematic elitist system now, absolutely, of this is a better choice, this is a healthier choice, this is bad food, this is junk food. I hate that term, junk food. This is toxic, this is real, like all these adjectives we use for food, that is definitely newer. So all of that collectively is possibly a few decades old. And what we're really seeing is, I mean, it reeks of privilege, to be completely honest. And I'm going to say I was that person. Like, I was the person who thought I was better because of the choices I was making. Look how clever I am. Look how healthy I am. Look how great I am doing. What I actually had was an eating disorder, by the way. But to the world, I was so together because I was making such great choices about my diet. The fact that I spent 18, 19 hours a day thinking about that, no one really knew. But to be completely honest, that's still held up as really great in society. My eating disorder is apparently the goal. Like as in that way of thinking, not my specific experience. And what we're really talking about there is the moralism of food. these are good, these are bad, therefore I'm good or bad for making that decision. And we also have the very, very inaccurate but very believable connection here that what you eat contributes everything to who you are and how healthy you are. The reality is that is just not true. And you can see it in your own lives. You can know someone who has a quote unquote terrible diet and has nothing wrong with them. You can see it in your own life of someone who quote unquote eats everything and doesn't really gain any weight, or the opposite. Like, no, there is no black and white of you eat this and this happens to you. That is just, if nothing else lands for someone today, I just want that to land. The way that you choose to eat is just your call. And the knowledge that we have about nutrition science and the needs of humans, guess what? It hasn't really changed in about 60 years. There's no new information. Like, we know the bits that we need for human life. And even if you have, you know, the Instagram version of beautiful eating and healthy eating and all the things you think you're meant to be doing, if you're not eating enough and if you're stressing the hell about it, that's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I find is the pressure on choice tends to disempower people to take care of themselves in the first place. And what I want to support in people is that eating enough is the most important thing. And giving your body the confidence, because let me be clear, your body perceives not enough as possible starvation. It does all kinds of really messed up things to try to make you eat. Mm-hmm. And that's not a great place to be. That's not a healthy place to be. So if we look at, could we just eat enough food? What we'll actually find is a lot more brain power and a lot more headspace. Because then if you say to me, say you're my client, Nivea, and you want to work on eating more nourishing foods, that's a beautiful goal. I love that. I want to support that for you. But if you also come to me and tell me, oh, I eat so much junk, I can't control myself, what I'm actually hearing is lots of food judgment and moralism.
Mm.
So until we get through that, until we unpack that and everything's neutral for you, we will always have the pendulum that you talk about. Until everything is even and neutral, until we can go chicken, rice, donuts, until that's all the same, emotionally I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We can't actually ever make a great decision that feels connected, nourishing, pleasing, satisfying, all of those things matter, right? Because we're actually still stuck in some level of diet stuff.
Yeah. I think this kind of also does sound like intuitive eating that you were talking about in the framework. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, or let's go into that a little bit more?
Yeah. So the easiest way I like to teach this as a concept is that it's a framework rather than a thing. It doesn't advise how to eat. Its outcome or its focus is to offer a framework that is inherently about self-care and about body connection. So when I bring this into work with my clients, my goal for them through this work from a nutrition perspective and a body perspective is, can they meet their own needs regularly, consistently, all of their needs? Like, do they sleep enough? Do they drink enough water? Like, all the stuff we know is good for us, right? But why is no one doing it? Because no one is, really. But coming from the perspective of they want to rather than they should.
Yeah.
That's a very different place to be, very different place. And that includes things like movement and how they feed themselves, absolutely. But it's, as I said, coming from the structure that they want to care for their body because their body is cool and it takes them through their life. And that body requires a lot of maintenance and a lot of care, because it just does, all of our bodies do, that what it looks like is not actually as important as we've been led to believe. It certainly doesn't mean health or not health, you know, the size or the shape of your body. So we're starting to really pack down all of these ideas we've probably had forever about bodies and food and eating, And now we're coming into this place where, as I said, even movement is part of this, our body image is part of this, where the framework of intuitive eating really offers you the perspective of, I'm the expert of me. And now I really feel that. And so if someone is ordering seconds, I probably don't even notice because I'm so content with my own kind of thing over here. Maybe I want some, maybe I don't. If I'm at a party and they're eating foods that I'm not interested in, but I'm hungry, I know it's important to eat when I'm hungry. So I just go, I know it's a bit disappointing. This isn't really what I want to eat, but it's important that I eat because I care about my body. We can make all these flexible decisions that work in lots of different environments that aren't any one thing, but they all center around the fact that only you know the things that will feel and work the best for you. So it's my job to help get some of the noise out of the way for you to actually go back to that. Because you know, every single one of us has that inherent default, know when we're hungry, know when we're full, know when we're satisfied, know what foods work for us best. And all of the stuff that gets in the way of that is what we need to kind of work on removing. And intuitive eating as a framework does a really great job at addressing all of that big stuff in the world.
I love that because it's so, so powerful where you're kind of focusing on not food or not like any of those things to do with eating, but more about focusing on yourself and how you feel, which is so powerful in so many different ways, whether it's to do with your mental health or, you know, anything, not just with food, that itself is something that everybody needs to learn. And we kind of let that clutter in so much and we listen to so many people and so much around that there's so much around us that we get confused and pressured into thinking that we don't, you know, what we are feeling is not as worthy as what somebody else is feeling. As the bottom line.
Yeah. I think that's really well said. Yeah.
Which is really challenging for you to take on in your kind of work as well, right? Like, because you're addressing so many other aspects of it with intuitive eating.
Yeah. I mean, I'll often say to clients that this work that we will start doing together, it never really is about the food. It never really is about the eating. And often through our work, they actually may go on to realize there's some other stuff that needs some attention. And maybe they go into some psychotherapy. Maybe they go into some, you know, marriage counseling. There's other parts of their life that they realize, oh, wow, this is maybe needs some love, needs some attention. Maybe they change their job. But, you know, the first question I often ask pretty much every client is, if you and I do this well together, if we feel like we can connect you back to your body and feel like you're empowered to make decisions about food and nourishment and care, what will you do with your time? What will that look like for you? And because we spend so long doubting ourselves, as you spoke about, we spend so long thinking we don't know anything, and we do, we absolutely do, that we don't even have the space in our damn brain to do other stuff. And I can give you personal experience here that I would not have a successful business that I am the CEO of if I hadn't stopped worrying about all of this in my life, if I hadn't have got care and support to move through, because I didn't have the space to even think about how would I run a business, So it really is, in each person's experience, it's going to be a little bit different, but dieting is the ultimate tool of keeping someone down. And it is really tricky to unpack a lot of these things. They're very complicated, nuanced topics that potentially someone listening to this now is like, oh my goodness, now there's more to do. And it can feel sometimes like an insurmountable mountain to climb, but it doesn't feel like that forever. Like, even though you may shift to, oh goodness, now there's this and now there's this, new layers, absolutely, but they're not. I would offer nothing is as hard as just the first decision to say, I don't want to do this anymore. However, I've been relating to food and my body, possibly by outsourcing, possibly by taking someone else's word over your own kind of body's lived experience, making that decision is possibly the hardest one.
Mm-hmm.
And starting to fill your world with other information, other, dare I say, hobbies, other things that you're even interested in, because I think that food, I love food. I think it is a joy of life. I think it's a simple pleasure of life. And I'm so grateful that I have access to food pretty much whenever I want and what I want. However, it really should not be a huge part of our lives like it is. That is incredibly problematic, how we position food. And this is coming from someone who works in the nutrition space, who is a qualified nutritionist, that I think we blow a little bit of smoke up the industry, to be honest. I think we make it this big behemoth of a thing. And I think the reason for that is fear. Mm. We want the answer. We want to know what the secret to health and long life is and thin bodies. And the thing is that none of that is actually really about food.
So are you saying we're striving for that particular body type or?
Absolutely.
And that is
most
what is.
Most people don't. Yeah, and that sorry, was, sorry, please,
and that is what is making us kind of obsessed, quote unquote, with food.
Yeah, I think we have two general drivers of interest in food and nutrition. I think the first is an assumption it will lead. Like, this is something I hear a lot. If I take care of myself better, and I want to kind of use that generalized statement, because what that means to most people is I will eat differently. I will eat more veggies. I will cut back on takeaway. It has a general assumption about what taking care means. Now, I don't believe that to be the definition, but that's generally what we assume. Yeah. So if someone says, I'm going to take care, what they're really hoping, and I hear this every day, is I'm going to lose weight because of it.
Mm.
That's actually their hope. They don't really care generally about what's going on inside, what their mental health kind of might be dealing with, because the value placed on thin bodies in society is immense. So I get it. On the other hand, we have drivers, and I've also experienced this firsthand, where we hope so much that we can maybe take away some suffering. Maybe we're suffering with a chronic disease or an illness. Maybe we have some discomfort in our body, and we're so desperate, understandably, to get rid of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the kind of gross wellness industry, I actually have a podcast app coming out on that very soon. We have been falsely sold the promise that food can fix things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, like you've got some, I don't know, whatever problem in the world you want to kind of face. I don't know, you've got diabetes. Let's just say that. That's a very common, there are all these assumptions that you can fix, in inverted commas, you can cure yourself. And that's immensely problematic. Or if I eat this way, I won't get diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why we would want that driver. But the problem is it tends to create such pressure and stress for folks. And stress, if we talked about stress like we talked about food, I think we'd be a lot better off.
Mm.
Stress is incredibly dangerous and problematic, like chronic stress. The chronic stress that people have, often because of people in my position or doctors who really make people feel very ashamed. If you didn't do this, this wouldn't happen to you. Mm. You never would. The reality is that health as a concept is so complex and is mostly out of our individual control. And that can be terrifying for people. It was for me to acknowledge I live with three chronic illnesses that I can't help. There's nothing I can do. I just got them, right? And there are so many people who have conditions that maybe they feel they caused because of this way we speak about food.
Mm.
Maybe if I hadn't eaten so much sugar, they might say. But it just doesn't work like that. That's such an oversimplified way to look at food and bodies. And I really am very critical of any brand or profession that really makes people feel so disempowered like that and makes them feel like they've done the wrong thing. So, again, I think we have drivers about body and appearance, and I think we have drivers in the hope that we can cure and fix ourselves and have eternal health and wellness and whatever that means. And that's not to say that what we eat doesn't matter. Of course it doesn't. I would be an idiot to say that. It just isn't the only piece of the pie. And it's actually a very small piece. And I think when we start to go into that, as I've done with clients, it can be really scary for them to face the reality that we just don't have ultimate control over our body size, over the health outcomes, over when we will die, how we will die. And that's all really scary. Like, it is really scary. But assuming, and these charlatans that exist that try to sell us a program or a product or a service, I mean, they should just be so ashamed of themselves, because they definitely know better and they know what they're doing, and they put MD or doctor in front of their title, mm-hmm. and they know exactly what they're doing, trying to scare people. And instead, we just have better stuff to do than be so stressed out about what we're eating all the time. Like, life is just, you're not here to pay bills and shrink. That's like just not what you're here for.
Yeah, I think we're forgetting that there's so much more to what causes these health issues, body shapes and sizes, that we're just giving focus to food, but there are so many other factors, like you're saying, stress and you know, everything else that there is to life, basically.
Well, and most of it is actually, if anyone's interested, just Google the social determinants of health. It's possibly the easiest way to understand this. Is most of the outcomes of health are directly impacted by things that you have no, like, zero control over. So one of those things is who your parents are.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't choose that. Your biological genetics, huge driver in your health. The access you may have to healthcare is a driver of your health outcomes. And someone might say, oh, well, anyone can go to the doctor. There's plenty of places that you can't go to a doctor, or you receive inadequate care, or you have to wait 2 years to get an appointment. There's so many variations of this.
Mm-hmm.
And really, this is why we can't have a conversation about health without really having a conversation about social issues. Like, they are one in the same thing. Every single country in the world has the same data. Those who are in the lowest socioeconomic status have the worst health outcomes, have the lowest short lifespans. Mm-hmm. Every single place in the world that happens. And it's so interesting to me that societally we shame humans and their individual choices. You ate this, you ate that, you got fat, et cetera, all the shaming. And yet the systems that created most of that inequity in health are way bigger than any of us as individuals. And to be honest, they don't get addressed enough, or they don't get explored enough. So most people that come to me with a health concern are convinced they caused it. They did it to themselves.
Mm.
And often they think it's because they gained weight as well.
Mm-hmm.
None of that tends to be the case.
Yeah. I just want to touch on one thing that we spoke of a little earlier about intuitive mm-hmm. eating and mm-hmm. listening to yourself. And understanding your body.
Please.
What are some signs that people can look for, you know, when they're kind of focusing on themselves? Sometimes I find that personally hard to, like, when you're trying to change your whole, you know, idea of listening to yourself over everybody else. What are some things that we can kind of, just to help people go in that direction? What are some things that we can look at in terms of how we're feeling? So that we know that, you know, okay, this makes sense.
I think acknowledging what you just said is a great place, that it can feel like a lot. It can feel really difficult. So I would really invite, just focus on one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that is interesting to you would probably be the place to start. So some areas that you could bring focus to are your stress levels. We were talking about stress. That might be, do you even notice when you're getting really stressed? Do you even notice when you're, maybe another way we experience, or let me kind of rewind there and say, what does stress feel like to you in your body? Because our experience of stress is very different person to person.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that we tend to experience stress is very up and very down, very high, very low. So for instance, when we think of something like burnout, which gets discussed a lot, burnout actually often looks like pretty spaced out, pretty checked out, pretty flat, you know, like, but you're also a million miles a minute on the inside. So you're outside quite checked out, but inside you are stressed, you are worried, you are thinking a million things. I've got to do this, I've got to do it, but I can't. And then you feel bad and then you just keep going. So even noticing you might do that is very powerful. Like, what is going on in my body in space? Like, remember, to be completely honest, remember you have a body, like you are a body. I know we're very cognitive creatures. I think particularly in the age that we live in, as I'm an older millennial, but like millennials in the kind of tech age, we forget we are like a whole body, not just like a cognitive thinking brain with lots of thoughts all the time. We have feelings, we have emotions, we have sensations. So stress might be a place to start. What about even something like, do you know what hunger feels like? Hunger is another sensation that is super different for everybody. Doesn't have, and someone found this really interesting when I was teaching on this recently, hunger in itself is a spectrum of sensations. So what you feel when you're a little bit hungry is very different to what you feel when you're very, very hungry and what you feel to when you're not hungry. And can you notice what those differences are in your body? Like, you don't need to Google that. Like, that is not a Googleable thing. Googleable? Is that a word?
Is that a word? I don't know, but we'll go with it.
There are definitely cool scales you can look at to start to help you understand some of the things I'm talking about. But I would really invite you to just start to look in and notice stuff. If you can't name it, that's fine. Notice, like, hey, at the moment, my body's hot. Like, honestly, right now, my body is quite hot. And that's probably because I'm getting all excited and, you know, I'm passionate about this topic, right? So my body is responding with some activation. I'm feeling quite hot. Noticing things like that is super cool.
It is.
It's like, wow, my body, it's doing all these things. Unconsciously, it's doing all these things. What about thirst? That might be another one. If you don't want to do stress, you don't want to do hunger. Do you notice when you're thirsty? When do you notice you're thirsty? How does it feel to be thirsty? Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it just whatever? And we can look at so many experiences that you have. And I would also add another invitation that whatever you want to notice, do you add labels to that that are moral? So hunger is a really tricky one for a lot of people because there's a lot of moral stuff around being hungry. And that's, again, related to dieting and the weight loss kind of side of it. But hunger is just hunger. It's not moral. It's not good or bad. It's just a sensation or mixture of sensations. So if you think of needing to go to the bathroom, chances are you don't think that that's a bad or a good thing. Chances are you just think, I got to go to the bathroom. Being hungry is exactly the same. And I would ask if you notice in yourself that they feel very different. Because what you're picking up on is moral labels. You're not picking up on body information. You're not picking up on, I mean, of course they feel different, but really what you're detecting in yourself is more, oh, maybe I kind of have like a thing about being hungry. Maybe I judge myself. Maybe I think I'm not meant to be. And maybe that's what's actually making it hard to act on it or connect to it because I'm going, oh, no, go away, go away. And when you need to go to the bathroom, you're like, okay, cool, I need to go to the bathroom. And you just do it and it's fine, it's no big deal. That's actually very healthy and functional.
Yeah.
So is that a helpful, like, was that a helpful kind of insight?
I think so. And I loved that correlation with going to the bathroom as well, because
it's a good one, right?
It's such a good one because we tend to definitely judge ourselves. We're like, oh my God, I just ate like an hour ago and I'm already hungry. Mm. Or, you know what, if I eat this, this is going to happen to my body or whatever. But I think that that's such a powerful correlation. Yeah. It should be like that. It should be treated like that.
It definitely should be. And I think if I can kind of offer a last invitation in our time together, which is being curious about your experience is a sign of compassion to yourself and is a really beautiful and valuable place to be. It's not just fluffy and pretty and nice. It's also really valuable, because when you just gave that example, which I know everybody has had this happen to them, frustration and annoyance. Why am I hungry? I just ate. Like, that's happened to everybody, right? If we're asking genuinely asking ourselves, being curious, why am I hungry? We can get so much information about the situation. And if I bring into what we do with intuitive eating framework, that helps me support a client to figure out, not that there's a problem with being hungry, but why are we hungry so soon? Is it because the food we're eating is not enough? Is it because we're not eating the thing we really want to eat? There's so many options here, right? Mm-hmm. But if we ask the question, not only do we actually, we're way more likely to get somewhere with it. We're more likely to grow and develop and get more connected, but also it's just way more pleasant to experience than you shouldn't be hungry, which is a judgment. So whenever you notice, that might be another thing for someone to focus on. How often do you not even ask yourself a question or be curious? You go straight to judgment about yourself, right? That is a remnant of living with diet culture, where there is only black and white. There is good and bad or nothing else. The thing is, how's that working out?
Yeah.
Because for most people, it's not working out very well.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. All that you've just said so far and all that we've discussed, like, I feel like I have to go and kind of download all of this information.
There's a lot there, right? I hope it's been helpful. Thank you of for course. A chat.
Yeah. No, I think that it was so amazing and so refreshing to have a conversation like this, because otherwise mm-hmm. it is so channeled in particular directions. Like, this was a bit more deeper, mm-hmm. which I really enjoyed. Our listeners follow you? And I know that you do a podcast called The Food and Body Freedom. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And also That's where our listeners can kind of follow you and things.
Thank you. This is the, I so appreciate the mention. So yes, my podcast, Freedom Body Freedom, I put episodes out each fortnight and talk about all these kinds of topics. I aim to be quite practical in a lot of them. So for instance, if you're struggling with, I feel guilty for eating this food, I will kind of talk through a process that can actually be quite helpful to move beyond that. And then some of them, like the one that I referenced is coming out soon, is more about living in systems that are really hard about bodies and about food. And I have amazing guests that are so knowledgeable, like in their niches as well. So that's that. And I am at Nadia Felsch on all of the things, which is NadiaFelsch. And they're probably the best ways to find me. I am very active on Instagram particularly. So come say hi.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Nadia. We will definitely link to your podcast as well as your social media handles in the description. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Nivi.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the IKIVI podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The IKIVI podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at IKIVI. We'll be right back.